Good morning. 4 minutes past the hour. This is Faith Radio. And yes, it's finally Friday. We are excited about the weekend being just around the corner. If you can make it through today's work day. Here's a question for you. How do you feel about the term evangelical? Has the meaning of that word changed in recent years to denote something very different than it used to? Coming up in less than 5 minutes, we'll explore that issue with our friend Chris Martin of the MillennialEvangelical.com. And later on this hour, we'll get an update on Donald Trump's latest cabinet picks and his thank you tour from political science professor Dr. Paul Kinger. That's coming up in about 30 minutes from now. Sad story out of our Faith Radio state of Iowa. A pickup truck rammed through the front of a Walmart in the town of Pella, Iowa, yesterday, killing three people. The crash appeared to be an accident, not intentional, according to police. Investigators say at least two other people were hurt, including the truck driver. None of the people killed or injured were children. The police spokesman, Sergeant Nathan Ludwig, said we're heartbroken by what appears to be a tragic accident. A photo posted by the Des Moines Register shows that truck stopped in the produce section with debris scattered across the floor. Crews evacuated the store after the crash. Fire trucks and ambulances rushed to that scene in Pella, Iowa. Be praying for the families of those three individuals who lost their lives and the two people that are injured and in the hospital. And, of course, be praying for the store employees at that Walmart, because I'm sure many of them have been affected emotionally by what they witnessed yesterday. Good morning. 7 past the hour at the Faith Radio Network. A little bit of Christmas music for you as we get closer to our celebration of the birth of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Joining us from Nashville this morning, it's Chris Martin, writer, social researcher, the creator of the website MillennialEvangelical.com. Good morning, Chris.
Well, how are you this morning?
Good. First of all, I know your state has been dealing with a huge tragedy with the fires in the Great Smoky Mountains, and I know you're on the other side of the state from the fires, but how are the folks in Tennessee coping?
Man, it's rough. You know, my wife and I, we went for our one-year anniversary. We were living in Nashville, Gatlinburg, and spent a weekend in a cabin there I don't know if it exists anymore. My wife went there a number of times as a kid when we both grew up in Indiana, but she and her family came down to Gatlinburg a number of times as a kid. So it kind of, she said to me the other day, she said, it feels like part of my childhood is gone, and we don't even live there. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, so it's tough, but in fact, she stopped at the grocery store on the way home yesterday, and she was like, I gave $5, to the cash register because they were collecting money for Gatlinburg residents and things just at the grocery store here in our town. So, it's been really tough. I mean, we've smelled smoke for weeks, both wow. from not just from Gatlinburg, but from, you know, northern Georgia and other places. It smelled like, you know, at 6 o'clock in the morning, it smelled like someone's having a fire pit down the road. But yeah, and there's been a haze. So it's just, man, it's rough. We're praying for them. And there are a number of fundraising efforts, not only around Nashville, but around Tennessee, and I'm sure around the country, trying to help the folks of Gatlinburg.
I was following the story. I don't know if this has been in the local papers, the local media, about the one dad that was trying to get a hold of his wife and two daughters. Wasn't sure if they had escaped from their home. Have you been following that? Do you know if there's any resolution on that story?
No, I haven't. I haven't heard about that story. I just saw a couple of the videos and some of the general coverage. I had not heard about that story yet. No.
Well, we're praying that indeed that wife and mom was found safe, and those two girls were found safe there. Chris, something that a lot of Christian leaders have been grappling with lately is this term evangelical. And I know you identify yourself as an evangelical, but it seems like that word may be evolving now, especially given the most recent presidential election. What does, in your opinion, what does the label evangelical tend to mean these days?
Yeah, it's really tough because evangelical to me and to a lot of people has always been sort of a theological term or a doctrinal term. Like it's always been about belief, what you believe about God in the Bible. So the technical kind of structure that has been used for a number of years now is called the Bebington Quadrilateral, which basically is just four core beliefs of evangelicalism, which is the idea that you need to have a born again experience, that you want to do missions work, that you think the Bible is the ultimate authority, and that you think that what Christ did on the cross is the only way that we can be saved. Those are like the four core beliefs of evangelicalism, and that's what I've always understood evangelicalism to be, and most evangelicals would say that. But what we have – really it happens every time an election, a presidential election comes along. But just in our current media culture, and by that I mean 24/7 news cycle, social media, thousands, millions of articles being written about these things every day, every week. Evangelical, especially like that first, for instance, that 81% of evangelicals voted for Donald Trump number. The reason, for instance, that is concerning to a lot of evangelicals, Christians in general, or the outside world, is they see someone like Donald Trump, who, regardless of what you think about policies, et cetera, had some stuff revealed about him that doesn't necessarily align with evangelical views, whether it be his past, or things he said, racially or ethnically or whatever. And they say, wait, how can 81% of evangelicals endorse that? Because a lot of people, Christian or not, see the discongruency there. And so the reason that the term evangelical has kind of come under question is not because there's a group of evangelicals who find it ridiculous that people would vote for Donald Trump and they're like, how can this be? That's not so much the case. The term evangelical as a political term is very different from the term evangelical as a belief term. So evangelical as a political term is a pollster standing outside a polling place when someone comes out, them saying, are you an evangelical? And that person answering yes. That is, an evangelical is not at a polling place, for these polls where you hear 81%, for example, is not going to be asked questions like, have you had a born-again experience? Do you believe the Bible is the ultimate authority? Do you believe Jesus is the only way you can be saved? There's not a – test is a bad word, but there's not anything beyond just – are you an evangelical? Does that make sense?
Yeah. And so I'm wondering, given millennials in particular, because that's what you write on the peers that you hang out with, are your friends pulling away from that term evangelical?
Yeah, I think we're pulling away from it. In fact, Sky Gitani, who's well-known in some circles, he's a writer, blogger. He's on the Phil Vischer podcast each week. He wrote a blog post shortly after the election called Farewell Evangelicalism and Hello Common Good Christian. And he's not changing his beliefs or anything like that. But what he is saying is evangelicalism, or calling himself an evangelical, has become more of a barrier to reaching people than a bridge to reaching people, because this term has been associated with beliefs or actions or words from whether it be Donald Trump or others that don't align with traditional evangelicalism, and it's made it harder for us to have a witness, really. So I share this concern, I think, but I think it's important to note evangelical as this political term isn't invalid. Like, it's not wrong. It's just maybe not precise. And another thing about the just an interesting tidbit about that 81% of evangelicals voted for Trump thing. What's important to note is saying that 81% of evangelicals voted for Trump isn't as accurate as you can be. It's more accurate to say 81% of evangelicals who voted for Trump. So that's just something to note, because that number is going to be different when only about half of the voting population votes. That number is going to be different than maybe 81%. But that's just an interesting thing I read after the election. But the term evangelical is becoming a little bit more ambiguous, perhaps watered down as far as theological terminology is concerned.
Well, the question is then what terminology should we be using? I mean, I tend to like I'm a follower of Christ, because that's really, I think it's accurate. It's a good description. But it's a little bit, burdensome to say I'm a follower of Christ whenever you're talking to somebody, and it might
raise some eyebrows. What do you mean by that? Well, maybe it opens the door for discussion. What do you think are some other terms, or what are some that are being floated? You said common good Christian. That's a little confusing. Do we have some words that are some terms that maybe we should enter into the lexicon?
Yeah, you know, I haven't heard any good suggestions. You know, follower of Christ is great and is perhaps more specific, but it's just more syllables and perhaps a little less practical. Evangelical, the term is not biblical. I mean, it was created by Carl Henry back in the 1930s or so, and it's not something old that we can't get rid of. I'm more than happy to move away from evangelical, but you know, I don't know that it's going to happen. A lot of people are kind of saying we need to kill the word evangelical. We need to come up with a new term. I understand the sentiment behind that. I mean, that's what we've been talking about this whole time. But I just don't. It's really hard to change something like that, especially when it has been around for 80 years or so. And I don't see it changing anytime soon. But I do think I saw an article earlier this week or this month talking about an evangelical civil war is coming. I think that's a little strong and maybe overstated. But I do think we're maybe going to see a bit of a split in evangelicalism, just as far as not what they believe, but maybe how they live out what they believe as evangelicalism becomes more diverse, both racially and just practically.
Well, at the very least, I think this opens the door for some great conversations for those who are not believers to explain what we mean when we say evangelical and what we don't mean. So Chris Martin is our guest. He is the creator of millennialevangelical.com. We'll take a quick break and be right back. Faith Radio. Good morning. 19 past the hour. This is the Faith Radio Network. It's Bill Meyer with Chris Martin, who we refer to affectionately as the millennialevangelical.com because that's who he is. He's the guy that created the website. And Chris, one of the things you said recently on the site is that Donald Trump is blazing a trail for Republicans. And I'm wondering, what is he doing that is so unique?
He is using Facebook and Twitter and social media like no presidential candidate ever has. He's more elect, but throughout the campaign, presidential candidate ever has. President Obama was by far the most successful using the internet and social media before Donald Trump. Mitt Romney did not do a good job of it in 2012, and John McCain did not do a good job of it in 2008. In both cases, I think it's fair to say that President Obama's online digital strategy really supported him and helped him. And Donald Trump did a much better job on social media and in the digital space than I think Hillary Clinton did. And obviously it's been a source of much criticism for him. I mean, he's regularly criticized for things he tweets, etc. But putting the content of what he says aside, what he does on social media has been really effective for him. And I believe his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, I think is his name, is kind of the guy who spearheaded that. And so something that's interesting, that what I wrote my piece about on the blog the day after the election, was that we've never had social media under a Republican president until now. So, you know, social media is an interesting space. I saw the other day that I started using Facebook like exactly 10 years ago, 2 days ago. And I remember when it like wasn't going to kill MySpace. That was silly. I've been using it as a user, and now I do it kind of for my job, but I've always kind of just studied what it tells us sociologically. Like, it's always been interesting to me what we can learn about ourselves based on how we use social media. The fake news epidemic, we can talk about that in a minute if you want, is so fascinating. But Donald Trump, Republicans have never had to defend a president on social media. You know, Facebook was around for the public in 2006 and 2007. So it was there right at the end of President Bush's time, but it wasn't nearly as popular as it is now. It was still pretty niche. And Twitter didn't come around until popularly 2007 or 2008. So it definitely was not what it is today under President Bush. So Democrats, for the for the existence of social media, Republicans have been on the offensive going after the president, and Democrats have had to defend their president on social media. I would venture to say because headlines matter more than anything, and reading things through is kind of the MO digital strategy and how people read and consume. I mean, I can't even tell you how many people comment on Facebook posts that are linking to articles before they even read the articles, and it's so evident. So people are just reading headlines and making assumptions about what is written. More difficult to defend a president than attack one, because attacking a public figure just takes a stinging headline or a bad looking image or, you know, very little. But defense usually takes more words. It usually takes more time to explain why a public figure, president or otherwise, did what he did or said what he said. But sound bites rule the day in social media, and sound bites are people, are attackers' friends when it comes to different ideological perspectives. So Republicans are for the first time going to have to defend a president on social media. And I'm just interested to see how it goes because they've never really had to do that before.
Well, and certainly there's a lot to defend with Trump's use of Twitter, his tone on social media. I mean, tone matters and words matter. And unfortunately, once it's out there, it's out there. And you wonder sometimes, and there's been times during the presidential campaign, I kind of was wondering, okay, where is Kellyanne Conway now when you need her most to, you know, keep his finger from pressing that send button? And you wonder, once he's the sitting president, once he's been inaugurated, what if he has a fallout with Putin and starts, you know, shooting off nasty tweets? That won't go so well. Are you there?
Right.
Are you there,
right,
Chris?
I mean, you don't want to. Yeah. Sorry, you were breaking up there. You don't want to have someone who's prone to spout off on social morning doing.
I think we're losing.
So
I think,
after a major international meeting or peace talks in the Middle East or something like that.
Yeah, I think we're losing you, Chris, with your Skype connection there in Nashville. So, Chris Martin, the millennial evangelical, thanks so much for joining us today. And we'll be praying for those folks in the eastern part of your state who are dealing with those terrible wildfires there in the Smoky Mountains. Past the hour, this is the Faith Radio Network as we get ready to celebrate the Christmas holidays, and found that the Mall of America is going to be celebrating with its first Black Santa. Veteran actor Larry Jefferson is posing for pictures and videos with kids all this weekend at the Santa Experience. Santa Larry, who is from Dallas, says his four-day gig is no big deal for most kids. He says he just happens to be a Santa of color. By the way, if kids want to have their picture taken with Larry, they have to do it by appointment. So appointment only there for the Black Santa at the Mall of America. Good morning. 34 past the hour. It's the Faith Radio Network. Just loving this Christmas music as we approach the holiday. I'm Bill Meyer. Rob Morgan is a pastor and the author of the book, The Strength You Need, The 12 Great Strength Passages of the Bible. His book talks about the power that reading the Bible can have when we encounter difficult times in our life.
The biggest habit that I've found in my life to help me through those times is going to the Bible and finding those promises or those verses that I need for every particular occasion. And we all go through just terrible things. I mean, life is a battle. But there is never a burden that we'll ever face without a Bible verse that God will give us to go through it. And in some of the darkest valleys, I have found verses of Scripture that have sustained me. You know, the Bible says, even though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, we will fear no evil. He is with us. His rod and his staff comfort us. And to be able to reach over to your Bible, you know, my conviction is that God has given to us a book that is small enough to hold in our hands, big enough to study all of our lives, and satisfying enough to meet our needs forever. And what I've done with this book, The Strength You Need, my wife and I found 12 Bible verses, and we have just drilled into those verses like an oilman drilling for petroleum in Texas. And I will tell you, God's Word gives us the strength we need when we don't have it on our own.
Wow, some beautiful words from Rob Morgan. You can hear his entire interview with Faith Radio's Susie Larson by going to myfaithradio.com and visiting the Live the Promise program page.
If you're a mom or dad, your worst nightmare is to watch your family spin out of control. But for some, the nightmare is not a bad dream. It's reality. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. When a teen and his family are headed toward crisis, parents often feel completely helpless. But although you feel powerless, it's important to remain strong and to take action. The first step is simply by accepting what's happening in your family. Then you need to make the decision to intervene. Once you've done that, it's time to put a plan into motion and get your teen whatever help he or she may need. Taking action might be painful, but it may be the only way to pull your teen out of a nosedive and restore peace to your home.
Is your teen struggling this Christmas? Request a copy of Mark Gregston's Prayer for Prodigals at ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
Good morning. 37 minutes past the hour. You've got the Faith Radio Network. Thanks for joining us wherever you might be listening. And, you know, if you're new to Faith Radio, we've got a welcome packet for you. Just go to myfaithradio.com and click on the welcome packet banner. We'll send that off to you in the mail this week. Our guest this half hour, Dr. Paul Kenger. He's a political science professor and the director of the Center for Vision and Values at Grove City College in Pennsylvania. Good morning, Paul.
Hey, Bill. How are you?
Good. Donald Trump, Mike Pence kicked off their thank you tour in Cincinnati last night. I'm wondering, is this a novel idea, or is it a common practice for presidential candidates to do this after they win an election?
Yeah, I mean, it's not common. I can't think. I'm trying to remember the last time that any president ever did anything like this, but I guess it's classic Trump, right? You're doing things that are different, some showmanship. You know, certainly this would be somebody that doesn't hesitate to take victory laps. I was going to say a victory lap, but in his case, victory lap. And he's not a humble person. He's probably going to remind everyone that he won as many times as he possibly can. He even said last Sunday that he won the popular vote, which was a really amazing thing to say. He said he won it if you disregard all the alleged countless millions of illegals that apparently cast ballots. So we see how he accepts losing, even though he won. I mean, you think he'd just say, okay, look, you know, she won the popular vote, but I crushed her in the Electoral College. He did. He crushed her in the Electoral College, and that's what counts. But yeah, so this is kind of keeping with the Trump persona, how he is, and I'm not surprised by it one bit.
Hmm. I was trying to think historically if there have been any president-elects that have done that. Let's say even, you know, if you look back to the 1800s, there were presidents on trains going across the country thanking the voters for electing them. Can you think of anything in history where, you know, a president has actually done a thank you tour?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of it, and I can't. And I mean, I'm sure I'm wrong. There's got to be somebody maybe who did that along the way, but normally they are just so hunkered down and overwhelmed with getting to the business of the transition. And which, you know, to Trump's credit, I mean, he's been kind of holed up inside a Trump Tower for about 3 weeks, just meeting with people nonstop. So he is he's definitely been working hard. He's clearly a high energy guy. But to take time out to do the victory, again, it's classic Trump, and I guarantee you too, Bill, this is gonna really just further enrage
the people
on the other side who already don't like him. I had to go through the numbers again this morning. I was talking to your producer Paul on the phone before I got on. And I'm putting together an article for Conservative Review, just the latest on the popular vote total. And this is really amazing, Bill. Hillary is now leading Trump by 2.57 million votes.
Wow.
In the popular vote total. Yeah, and I know people are saying, and I'll say it too, it doesn't matter. It's not relevant. You win the presidency by winning the Electoral College. It's absolutely right. But that said, you know, 2.57 million votes, this is really astonishing. She's probably now going to hit 3 million before this is over. I thought, can she hit 2 million? Well, yeah, she's at 2.57 million. And for a sense of perspective, when Bush beat Gore in the Electoral College in 2000, but lost the popular vote, he lost by about 500,000.
Right. I remember it was so – you look at the popular vote then, it was so close. And, of course, this is going to just – you know, there will be renewed calls for abolishing the Electoral College, certainly from the left. And yet, as we've discussed before, it's an incredible system, somewhat complicated, but our founders had the right idea and they did not want the tyranny of the majority to rule in this country.
That's right. Yeah, it is. It's a great concept. It's a brilliant concept. And really, you know, this is one of the reasons why I said with a Republican nominee, you want somebody who's articulate and really informed on these things, because right now you need someone to go out and just kind of calmly and peacefully say to people, look, this is what the Electoral College was about. Let me explain it to you. You don't have to have a PhD or teach political science. I mean, you get a couple briefings on this and maybe go out and give a talk, or not having to give a talk, but maybe just give some statements. And Trump has only tweeted saying, well, I used to not like the Electoral College, but now I do. he's literally done that. Well, you got to do better than that. You got to calm people. Because Bush losing to Gore by 500,000 votes in 2000, that was a record. And now you're looking at 2.6 million being the difference. And one other statistic, she's beating him now in the overall vote percentage, 48% to 46%. And he's actually at 46.2. That is lower for him than not only Hillary in 2016, but Obama in 2012 and 2008, then Romney in 2012, then Bush in 2004 and 2000, then Gore in 2000, then John Kerry in 2004.
Wow.
And it's almost lower, and I think he's maybe going to hit it. I didn't think he would. It's almost lower than McCain in 2008. So this was the narrowest of victories, and I've been telling Trump enthusiasts, be humble here. Take a lesson from this, and among the lessons you got to take from this is you better get higher than 46%
next time around.
2020.
Yeah,
you're not going to win. And they'll say, "What do you mean? We did this year." And now, look. Very, 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 very rare what happened this year. You're probably not going to get reelected in 2020 unless you bring those numbers up. I like the things he's been doing so far. But you need a lot more people to like what he's been doing in order for him to get reelected in 2020. There's been now three consecutive two-term presidents. Four out of the last five have been two-term presidents. And Donald Trump doesn't want to suddenly be a one-term president. Mm.
Well, and another issue, of course, it brings up is the increasing divide in this country between rural and urban voters. If you look at the vote totals and the popular vote count, and certainly the West Coast, East Coast, Heartland phenomenon, I think that whole red-blue distinction is going to become even more, critical in the years to come. Our guest is Dr. Paul Kengor from Grove City College in Pennsylvania. We'll take a quick break and look at some of Trump's recent cabinet appointments when we come back. Welcome back, 47 past the hour at Faith Radio. Dr. Paul Kengor is a political scientist, an author, and the director of the Center for Vision and Values at Grove City College in Pennsylvania, one of our regular political contributors here at Faith Radio. And I'd love to get your take, Paul, on some of Donald Trump's recent cabinet appointments. Last night, he announced that Marine General James Mad Dog Mattis is his pick for defense secretary. What can you tell us about General Mattis, and why, pray tell, does he have the nickname Mad Dog?
Yeah, this is very interesting. I mean, this is one of his more colorful picks. I'm a little bit surprised by it. I mean, not totally, because you know, this too kind of fits with Trump's unorthodox persona, but he is he's kind of a general George Patton type. I know people who know him. I was talking to one of his colleagues from the Institute of World Politics about 3 weeks ago, and we were just talking about the position, and I said, do you have any idea who might be tapped for this? This guy's kind of a Washington insider, and he mentioned James Mattis, and he said he had been one of his fellow students there, and how everybody there loved him, what a neat guy he was. And I thought, that's a long shot. I don't think it's going to be him. I mean, really, Bill, I thought that what might end up happening is that Rudy Giuliani wouldn't go to state and might go to Secretary of Defense instead. Or really, I think Giuliani would be great at, like, Office of Homeland Security. And maybe somebody like Romney at Secretary of State, but so Mattis being picked for Secretary of Defense, that's now closed that major appointment, and I don't know, this could be really interesting. I think people will really like the guy, and especially hawks, defense hawks and hardliners, I think they're probably going to love this guy.
It's interesting. I was reading it's going to take a waiver from Congress because federal law requires military personnel to be retired for 7 years before they take a civilian position in the Department of Defense. And he just retired from the military 3 years ago.
Right, 2013.
So, and he would only be the second retired general to serve as defense secretary. The last one being George C. Marshall back during the Korean War. So
wow.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. What about earlier this week, Trump named Elaine Chao as transportation secretary. Of course, Elaine served in George W. Bush's administration. She's the wife of Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. She seems like a shoe-in for confirmation. Any reason not to like her?
Yeah, she is a shoe-in for confirmation, and you know, she's very much a Washington insider. She's very stable in these positions in the Bush administration, labor secretary. She is she's highly respected. I can't think of anybody, Bill, that would vote against her. I mean, this will probably be his single easiest pick. So she's a good pick. I get what's kind of maybe interesting about her vis-a-vis Trump. She's not unorthodox, right? This isn't somebody really different who, if Trump wants to shake up Washington, would put her in place. But as Mitch McConnell's wife, after all things, you can't get more establishment than that. But she is very capable. She is very respected, and I don't see any reason why she wouldn't do a good job.
How about Steven Mnuchin? Trump has chosen him for Treasury Secretary. Obviously, a brilliant money guy, but doesn't
right.
doesn't a choice like that simply scream Wall Street insider?
Yeah, it should. And I mean, he hasn't only worked on Wall Street. He's done practically everything in the investment world. But that's, frankly, that's really kind of who you want for those positions. But yeah, that's. Bucks kind of what Trump has been trying to say in his shots at Wall Street, of all things, which I always saw as kind of phony anyway. I mean, I always thought that was a populist appeal by Trump that he really didn't have the credibility to make, because Trump's a New York guy. Trump's a Wall Street guy. But that said, he's a very good pick. I think he'll probably do a really good job. He's really smart. And it's hard to find anybody who knows more about money in the financial industry in multiple ways than him.
Hmm. What about the selection of Congressman Tom Price to be Secretary of Health and Human Services? He is a.
I love that one.
Yeah, he's a doctor.
I think that's one of the best. You have an actual physician, and which isn't something that you always get in that position. Amazingly. He served in Congress on both the Budget Committee and the Finance Committee. He knows Obamacare better than anyone, not just from a healthcare industry perspective, but as an actual physician and as a numbers guy in Congress who's looked at it up and down. I mean, the difference between him and like Kathleen Sebelius, is night and day. She was an ideologue, a Planned Parenthood radical abortion feminist who ends up pioneering the HHS mandate with Obama, and they end up suing everybody from Hobby Lobby to the Little Sisters of the Poor, which is still in court. So that's not going to happen with Dr. / Congressman Price. This I think is one of Trump's best picks.
Mm. Now, one somewhat controversial pick is Betsy DeVos for Secretary of the Department of Education. Can you tell us about DeVos's background and why she has the National Teachers Union all in a tizzy?
Well, the fact that she has them in a tizzy says that she's great.
Right?
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's a badge of honor. In fact, you might know her. Has she done your show before?
No, I do know that. I'm aware of the DeVos family background. I have not had Betsy on the program before, but I know she's a huge advocate for school choice and vouchers, and which is something that, of course, I would be very much in support of.
Yeah, yes, yes. No, she's been around. The DeVos family and Betsy as well, they've been very connected on the policy side to the Heritage Foundation for years. They come from Grand Rapids, Michigan. They've actually been involved in the Amway business for a long time. They made their money in that business. She is she's a policy wonk and an activist, and she's a big school choice advocate. And there, too, another really good pick by Trump. I'll tell you, Bill, I've got to give him an A on all these picks so far. Now, if we can just get him away from his stupid Twitter account, maybe things will be all right.
Oh, quickly before we go, Paul, the recount, Jill Stein's recount, she got it in Wisconsin. How likely is it that that will happen in your home state of Pennsylvania?
It's possible, but there's no chance that this is going to be overturned. There's a fascinating article up today at the Washington Post that says that Trump basically won the presidency thanks to 80,000 voters in three states.
Wow.
which frankly is right. But the margins in Wisconsin and Michigan, small as they are, and Michigan, I mean, he only won Michigan by 0.2% and only by 10,000 votes, but 10,000 votes is still a lot. I mean, it's not like 537 votes in Florida in the year 2000. So this is not going to be overturned. His electoral college victory is really solid.
And in Pennsylvania, the Pennsylvania vote is a wider margin. It takes a judge to actually approve that recount, correct?
Yeah, that's right. The last I checked, it was 1.2%. It might be closer to 1 by now, but that equates to a lot of votes, as does his 1.2% victory in Florida. So, no, the liberals are better carping and moaning about their big popular vote margin and how insignificant that is than they are trying to overturn anything in the Electoral College. They're not going to be able to overturn the Electoral College.
Mm. Thanks so much for your time, Paul. I want to point some folks to your website, for the Vision and Values website, some great articles there. And Paul has written some wonderful things about the future of Cuba now that Fidel Castro is gone. And we'll be praying for that nation that the right decisions will be made moving forward, especially Trump's decisions on how he relates to Raul Castro. So thanks, Paul, for your time. Have a great weekend.
All right. God bless, Bill.
Past the hour. This is the Faith Radio Network. Police in Oregon say a woman called them because a man was whistling a song outside her driveway. A woman called the Forest Grove Police Department, said the man was obnoxiously whistling Semisonic's Closing Time outside of her house. The Oregonian reports the woman told the man to shut up and stop whistling. Then she called the cops. A police captain told the newspaper he was not sure whether the woman was upset about the genre of the tune or the lack of talent in the man's whistling. So, you know, if you got a good Christmas carol, that might be something to whistle out somebody by somebody's driveway right now. Hey, have a great weekend. We'll see you back Monday morning at 6 a.m.